So we are the conscious entity, all is our pollution of all consciousness or of all love. So we have, everybody wants to love somebody and to be loved by somebody. So what is the best way in the world to love? We love others. The result is, he gives love in return. Sometimes we are doer, sometimes gainer. So Kabir says, if you love, have a game with God, game of love with God, how it will stand? You won him, he's yours. If you are defeated, you are him. In both is your gainer. Isn't that? So strike love with God or the God in man. God we do not see, but God is when we do see. Once it so happened in Kasam, some man stood up. He said, he was devotee of the master, he said, you say you want to see God? He stood up. I show each one of you. He says, they are wondering what is it? Here's him. He happened to the master sitting there, our master. So those who have dwelt love in them, by Nandalal, a very fond lover of the Guru. He, the one poem of Hafiz, he says, if you want to meet God, what you should do, go to the, leave all house and home and go to the wilderness. There, remember his love. And in return, what by Nandalal said, look here, oh, Hafiz, where are you going? Here the God sent you. Where will you go? So if you take the God with you, always with you, who desires in your heart, in you when you initiate, why not love him there? So love knows service and sacrifice. This is what I mean to say. Masters come here to join all in the silken bonds of love. Guru Arjan, you will find what he did. He compiled as many things on the masters as he could lay hands on in one book, which is a scripture called Guru Granth Sahib. Those who are, you know, God manifested, they were sent by God to guide the child humanity, whether in the east or the west, wherever it is. He compiled all the things in one book. Whereas you will find the things of one particular master, you always find in their book alone. Is it not finding them in the silken bonds of love, all humanity? So the point is, if you have a ruling power for ruling love for God, where will you go? First, go to God. If you got the ruling power, love for the world, you will come back again and again. So once it so happened that Moses was passing where one shepherd was sitting with his sheep around him, and he was praying, God, oh God, if you are hungry, you had come to me, I would go even the milk of these sheep to drink. If you felt cold, then I would have woven the woman, I mean the wool from the sheep and given you warm clothing. He went on, you know, love knows no law, you see. Whatever is expressed from the heart of love, they don't carry any pinching effect, you see. They appear to be sweet. Little child is there, he comes to slap you on the face. Do you feel love for them? So more than pass by that. Oh, heretic, what are you talking? Can God think? Would He wear your clothing of wool? Even see the sweet members of God in the reverie like that. He cried, "Oh God, I have disrespected you." While crying, he went down. God met him, "Look here, I will drink your milk also. I will have your clothing, you give me also." He was satisfied that Moses went and sat in meditation. God appeared to me, "Oh man, I have sent you to unite all in my love, not those are already in my love to take it away from them." So this is the what all Master gave us. Now Master has been giving some examples how should we love God. Guru Amar Das, you see, he got sat at the feet of his Master after 70 long years. He says, how should we love? Gives us some examples. That is just there one, you see, kamal, which is grown in the water, you see. On the leaf of the kamal, the water, the more it is, you see, overflow, water in streams and overflowing, the more that plant grows more. He says, in the water, you see, those are born in water just like fish. They live in the water. Once you take away from the water, they die. They never suffer separation for a minute. He says, we are in the ocean of life. God is there saving us, like fish we say, where is God? Although that very God is our own sustenance, support of our life. So, the fish is in the water, cannot live without water. He's got innate love for water. And God is innate in us, we should love God. How can we live without it? Our love is directed outside. If little we direct that way, we will be dragged like anything. Like milk and water is mixed. Water is love for the milk. The more you put in, the more the same color it takes. But when you put it on a boiling pot, water doesn't allow milk to be burnt. It first allows himself to be burnt. Something like that. You can love no service and sacrifice. Anybody with whom you are love in the world too, you like to sacrifice everything for him. The more in love you are, the more you sacrifice. Love means giving. Service. So, what should we do? We are man. This is the condition of those who sit at the feet of the Master. They have some contact within of God. You dwell like that, you drown like that. Which is if you don't find time to come in contact that for a few days, even you will find you will be dead like that. You will forget him and he will never forget. You do your practices regularly, what it happens? That God into special power, the music of the sphere begins to be audible without closing your ears. You may go on with what that goes on things. So this is the way to love. What? Love knows service and sacrifice. If we put an ounce of love in our homes, there will be. Then our homes are not happy because we do not put in love, an ounce of love there. Love knows giving. If wife and husband for instance, their love for another, why all this? You respect, both should respect for each other, both should sacrifice their interest for the love of one another, because God has united them. That makes us home sweet, at peace. You put an announce in our societies will be at peace. If you put an announce of love in our country, they will all peace, no wars. So love is the panacea for all wills, of all ills, I say, of the day, whether physical, whether of the beyond, of this world or the other world. So Master talks, sometimes doing direct, sometimes they give by way of parables. There is one parable given in the Bhagavad Purana. He says, Lord Vishnu invited, gave a feast to all the gods and goddesses, and those who were not gods, they got that. The feast was served, and God came and he sat in the rows, both gods and the others. So Lord Vishnu stood up and said to all, look here, this all this feast for you, eat to your heart's content. But there's one, my condition you should observe, and that is what it is. Don't bend your elbows to eat the food. When your elbows only, the food reaches your mouth, is enough. Those who are, you see, on that side, they say, you know, how the food we can eat without bending our elbows? They could not come to some understanding. They left this place in disgust, that Lord Vishnu has made a joke of it. He has placed the food, he has not let us eat the food. They went away and the gods were there, they were thinking these are the words of the Master or the Lord Vishnu. There must be something behind it if you don't follow. Then by little calm consideration, if you came to know, oh yes, it's very easy. How? This is my food. Don't bend but give to others. Straight up. Like that. So the result was, everybody was fine. Everybody you make others eat, then you will left heart alone. So love knows giving. If we want to give, we have love, we must learn to give all life. Then if you make others happy, you will be happy. If you torment others, you see everybody bends his elbows and everything for his own self, let it strike. The prison houses are full, the courts are full, only for that. You simply don't bend to yourself, but let others make them happy, make them fed, make them easy life, all in life. You be also enjoy the same. So love knows service and sacrifice. This is what you have followed. This is what says, Kabir says, so long as you got your body, give, give and give. So, what is all this? How it comes, as I told you? It is innate in us, but the only way is to love is to come in contact with somebody who is overflowing with love. By radiation first you will get. Free. You may not direct anything to you, by validation you will have it. And if you direct your attention, you view it, one pile of perfume, contact within you, then there, anywhere and everywhere. So this is had by, but by radiation, you see, in the company of those who are loved. That is why it is said in Bhagavad Puran, Bhagavad Gita, you may be performing all these outer practices of aparavidya, which relate to the ongoing faculties, mind and intellect. Without doing that, going to pilgrimage, performing certain havanas, singing, reading, you see, doing japas, penances undergoing, you say you won't have God so quicker as you will come in the feet of a, in the company of a saint. One is only just, you would like to have the fire by rubbing stone with stone, you see. One you will have fire burning, you can have a little free. So master come to give something, you see. And that is what they give? Their own life. What is their life? Jiyadan, their life is what? God. God is manifesting them. They are world flesh. The world has got two aspects, light and sound. This is Jiyamos. Everybody gives to any man anything. But how many there will give their life? So master gives their life, you see. What? In the shape of light and sound. You'll be exhausted? No, he's in the contacted with the perennial source, God. So that cannot be exhausted. Isn't it? So that is the real, that is why Master said, all Masters, East and West, Christ also said, others in the East also said the same thing. This is God, I am the God of life. This has come down from heaven. Whosoever shall partake of it shall have everlasting life. How to take? How to eat? Once he said to his disciples, eat me and drink me. Is this what he said? The people are wondering what he says. They forgot that first he said, I am the bread of life, I am word made flesh and dwelling amongst you. So eat me and drink me meant the word in him which he has given you. So that is the bread of life and water of life. He comes and gives freely to everybody. So that the man may be withdrawn from the outer enjoyments, because it is mind having control over the soul, which directs it to the world, you see. Mind requires going into expression. It is the, of the same kind as that of God of negative power. It always takes you into expression, not to see. So he, Master gives that taste which mind once has it, leads you down from outside. You remember the one Samaritan lady was going around at the pitcher of water full over her head, and Christ wanted water from her. She, out of complex, from inferiority complex, did not give it, because he belonged to the higher class, I am lower. And Christ said, had she given me this water to drink, my thirst would have been satisfied. But that would again come up. He said, had she come to me, I would have given her the water of life, which would have satisfied all thirst forever. So, for the body, the outer eating, drink is the food which gives strength to the body. To the intellect, we have got all learning, reading, writing, etc. That gives food to the intellect. And what is the food of it? Our soul. Our soul is conscious entity. The food of this can only be what is conscious. And that is the bread of life, which is called word, which is called naam, which resides in every heart. When you draw a pencil from outside and from the body below, take it up to above these outgoing faculties, which end at the level of the eye, there you get that water of life, that nectar of naam. This is what they come to give freely to everyone. This is their life, you see. Only what for? So that the children who are here, they go back to God. Their only mission is like that. People come to the world, you see. In a prison house, they say, one man came up, Red Singham, or Ashant. So master come, you see, their only job is to take back children of God back home, back God. Other incarnations come to punish the wicked, to uphold the righteous, and let the world agoing. But master comes, you see what Christ said, I have come to separate daughter from the mother, wife from the husband, sister from the brothers, and so on. I have not come to make world happy, that is worse. I have come to take all these back home, says the job. Who sends them? It is God alone. We are all children of God. When this God sees we are misery, we are not happy, then He sends His men, go, fetch back my child back home. Guru Arjuna says, whosoever, the God who has sent us in the world, when He sees us in trouble, in misery, then He sends His men to bring back my child. Tell them, their seat is here, their throne is lying vacant, come, let them enjoy forever while they are growing in the world outside. So masters, if the wife is away from her husband, at his father's home or elsewhere, separated from the husband, and she has very respectful life for her husband, even separated, she loves her. Then, after all, husband will be moved, he'll send me all a call as well. So any such man that comes up, what should the wife do? She should look to nobody else, go straight out to her husband. Her husband is calling her. Similar things, you see. When any master like that is sent by God, He sends to us, then it is God calling you back. Follow Him, go back home. Don't, what He says, keep His commandments. What He does, He say, we have to leave this world someday. All have left and we have to leave. There is no exception to the rule. Man body is a golden opportunity we have got, in which we can go back home. And if somebody has come to take you back, then what you should do? Hurry up. See? Just be ready to go. So they come only for that purpose. They've got no personal motive in it. They simply come to as ordered by God, of course. So mind body, this is the way to love. Love is tagging of the heart. Just like a water, fish and so much is in ourselves. This is, love is also innate in ourselves. But that is being just spent to the world outside. So mind body, if we are trying to dwell love for God, you are blessed, then that will become ruling passion. You will go to the feet of the God, to the lap of the God. But we have missed it. We have that very love dwelt with God, with world outside. The result is, ever since we have been separated from God, we have not gone home so far. So this is a high time, present mind body which you have got, Master, come, wake up. You are drowsy. You have forgotten yourself, you are under some intoxication of what he said, forgetfulness. Wake up, it is a high time for you. If you won't wake up now, man, body, the time to wake up. If you won't wake up, then when would you wake up? Time and tide waits for no man. And those whom God has sent up, somebody, they have sat at their feet, they have got something to start with, they should not delay. Others who have not got it, that is their fate, that's another thing, but they, those who have gone, they should have to go away. So, God is love, way back to God is also true love, and what is way to love, that is only kitty, calling or having the company of the, those who are old from the love, therefore. By reading, writing, other things, true love cannot work. You see, whom you have not seen, you have not seen that, how can you know? Love it. And we are playing game with the world, you see. Why not play game with God? If you defeat him, you become him. Yes? And you win one him, he becomes yours. Both ends, you see, you get the boon, you see. Such a man, while living in the world, is not of the world. Take the example of anybody. He is in love with somebody. He is sitting in thousands, but his whole thought is there. Emerson, when he wanted to go to a secluded place, he would like to go to an inn. He said, Pandit, come and go. Because here in the hotel, you see, Pandit, come and go. You are not careful. So secretary, real secretary is in himself. Mind your own business. The work you have begun, go on with it. If you succeed, you have won. You made the best use of your mind by the otherwise, you are dwelling love for the God, preparing for you again to come back. Our master used to give one example. Man was in the prison. His term of prison was being over. The day he had to leave the prison, his term was over for punishment. He told his neighbor, look here, keep this thing with you, I'm again coming back. This is what you do. In man body, you see the highest ideal before it. You can go back to God. Remain in your social body, that means most. It is a question of the heart, not head alone. You will go where your heart is attached. That way to love will come through the society, to the company of those who are all full in love, just like a scent flower, scent seller. In his radiation, you will have perfume free, and if you give you one pile of scent, what more is wanted? Your partner, you have got. Most of us, you were sitting, you have got some pile of love, of sent to, contacting him with the God, Father, the God. Well, make the best use of it. So, God is love, love is God, and way back to God in love, and this love is boosted in the company of someone who owes him. That's way to love. That was the subject to this. So this can be had there.
Hello, and welcome to the Satsang from Master Kirpal Singh. The recording you just heard was the last half of a talk given by Master in Chicago on October 28, 1972, called The Way to Love. Our reader this evening is Sheila Gilmore.
Good evening, everyone. I am reading from The Teachings of Kirpal Singh, Book 3 on Meditation, picking up where I left off last time in a section called Dry Spells. I'm beginning with the second paragraph in that section. The intervening dry spells in meditation, which the spiritual aspirant finds sometimes, are a blessing in disguise when the inner devotion is fostered for a higher step. You need not worry about it, but instead be earnestly devoted to your holy meditations with renewed zeal and vigor. The gracious Master Power will be extending all feasible help, grace, and protection. Man is so constituted that he cannot for long remain at one level. He either progresses or slips back. You may judge for yourselves which way you are going by seeing how far your mind and senses are coming under your conscious control. This is achieved not only by ethical living, but also by the inner help and strength you get every time you sit for your meditations. So, if no apparent inner headway is achieved, know it for sure that the ground is being watered. Every time you sit, you are creating a habit which one day the mind will accept as in its best interest, as opposed to its present habit of seeking enjoyment in outside things. Habit strengthens into nature, and this is the reason for the present difficulties experienced by the dear ones in their routine meditations. The habit of the mind in running after outside enjoyments has become natural to it, therefore it resents sitting in the quiet. By creating a new habit, you will, in time, change the nature of the mind from one seeking pleasure in things external to one thirsting for the bliss and sweetness to be had from things internal. Retarding factors. The divulging of inner experiences to others, except the master or more advanced disciples, affects one adversely and retards the inner progress. It has a significance. A rich man would like to control his hard-earned riches lest it be noticed by others who would become jealous of him. Similarly, the spiritual treasures achieved by the devotee need extra care and vigilance to be hidden from others so that the same may remain safe and well guarded. Just as a sapling is eaten away by a passing goat, but when it has grown into a stalwart tree, an elephant cannot uproot it. Again, the adverse thoughts of others do affect the disciple. Moreover, others growing jealous will not be able to give him or her proper guidance. The laws of the physical plane demand that each must behave soberly and must not exhibit his or her extraordinary qualities which relate to higher planes. And as such, the disciplined devotee is required to cultivate tolerance and humility. You can see that one narrating his or her personal experiences many a time becomes elated, thus invites the ego to take the upper hand, and pride has its fall as a result. On these basic grounds, the saints made a law to be strictly observed by one and all that the inner experiences must not be divulged except to the master, who is competent to give proper guidance on the way. Moreover, One should be very cautious to avoid falling into carnal enjoyments, as that darkens the inner vision. At the time of initiation, you would have been warned and clearly told about the things that tend to help the progress in meditation and the things that stand in the way and retard spiritual progress. They are recapitulated below for your guidance. Disclosing inner experiences to anyone other than the Master, neglect from abstaining from prohibited diet, i.e., all meat, fish, fowl, eggs, or intoxicants, gaps and defaults in any part of meditation retard the progress. You could not keep within yourself the new joy and beauty that the Master had given you and erred gravely in speaking about the same to blank. The reaction of blank's mind caused doubts to creep into your mind. Be rest assured. The Master is always with you from the time of initiation, seeing and reacting to everything that an initiate does. St. Luke said, "Take heed that the light which is within you is not darkened." So now, again, with love and devotion, pray to the Master power within to open your way. He will listen. He is not away from you. Your meditations will again become very sweet. Great opportunities will open up. Mind definition. Mind stuff is made of a highly rarefied matter of sattva substance in the elements. Gossamer-like, it spreads in the body with its tentacles deeply rooted in the senses, working through sense organs. Its base also goes far above, rooted as it is in the universal or cosmic mind Chid Akash. It serves as a link between the material body and the conscious spirit or soul in the body, which is enlivening both mind and body. Like fire, it is a good servant but a bad master. So long as the soul is in the mind zone, it is a prisoner. It is engulfed by the mind and is subject to it and has to obey the dictates of the mind. The mind and the soul combined in their turn are locked up in forms, causal, astral, and physical, successively. The mind feels shy of going in and coming in touch with the sound current, for there it loses its identity and freedom. Instead, it is prepared to go to the extent of sitting in trenches in the face of bullets to win a bottom victory, or will gladly face the risks of crossing the Atlantic to gain a name or establish a record. What constitutes desire? All conceptions in the mind are desires. At present, the mind desires those things it cannot get. When it realizes the truth, the whole of nature will be at its beck and call. Mind is nothing but a storehouse of karmic impressions coming down from the beginning of time in an endless series of incarnation. The body cannot but perform karmas, and karmas fashion the body and all that is of the body and bodily relations. The entire world is a play of karmic impressions stored in the mind by the people of the world. This is why the world is termed as Manome Srishti, or creation of the mind. The mind by itself is not conscious. It is the consciousness of the soul that the mind reflects. Anyone whose soul is under the mind's influence and control becomes an image of the mind, for he forgets his true self. We call this ego, or I-hood, for one thinks, "I am everything." God plus mind is man, and man minus mind is God. Intellect. What are the attributes of mind? Mind has four facets or attributes, to wit, one, chit. It may be likened to a lake in which countless streams of impressions are imperceptibly pouring in all the time. Two, manas. It is the thinking faculty of the mind which cogitates over such impressions as rise on the surface of the lake in the form of ripples and waves, just as the breeze of consciousness blows over the waters of the Chit Lake and sets in motion an endless chain of thoughts one after the other. Three, buddhi, or intellect. It is the faculty of reason, ratiocination, discrimination, and finally decision after considering pros and cons as presented by the manas. It is the grand arbiter that tries to solve the problems of life which come before it. Four, ahankar, or ego. It is the self-assertive faculty of the mind, for it likes to assume credit for all the acts done, and thus prepares a rich harvest of karmas that keep one moving up and down in the giant wheel of life. All actions leave an impression behind, which dull minds fail to decipher. Only when the mind develops, and this it does when we travel within and upwards, the memory revives and the record becomes intelligible. Question. We have been taught in our satsang that all thoughts that enter the mind during meditation register on the astral and take the form of karma for us. Would you please comment on this? Answer. The thoughts continue feeding the mind and register impressions in the citta, the subconscious reservoir of the mind, and serve as seed karma to fructify at a later stage. However, the thoughts entering the mind during meditations become more potent to bear fruit at the earliest opportunity, and as such are considered more violently harmful than those entering the mind in the normal waking hours. It should be attributed to the inner concentration during meditations, when the mind becomes comparatively more sharp and one-pointed. The listening to the holy sound current as coming from the right side with rapturous attention and absorption therein burns away these seeds of karmas and renders them infructuous to bear fruit. Attributes of mind. What part does intellect play on the path? Very little, where the practical side is concerned. But this does not mean that intellect is harmful to spirituality. If an intellectual man comes on this path and really gives himself up to the master's will and does what he is told, then there is no better disciple for this path than he. For there he has an advantage over an ordinary practical man. And that advantage is, he will be able to give out the truth to others in many ways, in a language made with well-thought-out words that will convince the intellectualist more easily than simple words uttered by a mere practical man. Question. Does intellect play any part in self and God realization? Answer. Yes. Intellect plays an important part in understanding the theory of the problem of self-realization. Once the theory is grasped, there is not much left for the intellect to do. Thereafter remains the practice with heart and soul to achieve the goal by a process of self-analysis, for the science of the self is essentially practical. Question. Can we penetrate into the beyond by intellect? Answer. No, intellect is just one of the faculties of mind, to wit, reasoning. The intellect is earthbound, and so is reasoning based on intellect. How can the less, the greater comprehend, or finite, reason with infinity? Question: can we ever be sure of God realization intellectually? Answer: no. God realization is not a subject of intellect. It is a question of actual experience, beyond the pole of knowledge. All our talk of God is but inferential, and at the most a matter of feelings and emotions, all of which are subject to error. But seeing the inscape with the inner eye opened is believing, and admits of no uncertainty and skepticism. I would advise you not to dwell too much on ratiocination, for it tends to scatter the mind. This thinking self continues to be with us for quite a long time, its range extending from the physical to causal states, and until all these states which constitute the mind zone are successfully crossed, it does not drop off. For spiritual progress, stillness of mind and intellect is most essential. Any unnecessary wrestling with the intellect or free play of the mind retards spiritual progress. Concentration means the control of mental vibrations and may be obtained by attuning within to the sound current, which is the astral manifestation of the master power always present with you. Verbiage is simply a vehicle of expression. When you try to put forth your innermost feelings, seeking solution for the confusion created by your mind. Each question carries a rational answer in its bosom. The human intelligence baffles at times at surface, but if you endeavor to delve deep into the innermost recesses of silence of the heart, you will find ineffable divine bliss gushes forth from the fount of Godhead. Divinity dawns in deep silence. The seer becomes dumb and mute with overwhelming divine intoxication and relishes to absorb his little self in him, the light and sound principles. Philosophy deals with theory, but mysticism deals with contact with reality, because philosophy works on the intellectual level, whereas mysticism works on the level of the soul. At the level of the intellect, you may remember so many things about what the master has said and given out. That has no life. You are talking only at the level of the intellect. So life or consciousness is something else than intellectual wrangling or wrestling. You may, however, know that thought is an expression of soul, being an abstract attribute granted to the humans for smooth working in this world. But you have to transcend this realm of intellect by stilling it, when the divine revelations of light and sound current will recharge your soul with divinity and result in eventual mergence with the Absolute. It is beyond the ken of human comprehension to gauge the grandeur and limitlessness of divinity. Your questioning is within the domain of intellect, whereas spirituality dawns when the intellect is silenced by loving devotion and reverential humility. It is during the silent and sublime moments of holy meditation, when the child disciple is nearer to the fountainhead of bliss and harmony, and the rare boon of right understanding is granted with the grace of the Master, regular feeds of holy Nam will manifest to you divine glory in its pristine beauty. The initiates are invariably advised to practice the divine virtues, which are helpful for regular progress on the holy path. It is a slow but sure process. Obstacles of the mind. Between God and Spirit, there is no other obstacle but that of a veil of the mind. If this veil were to stop fluttering in the breeze of desires, as it does at present, the Spirit can take in directly the cosmic energy from its very source. The mind may stand in between, but the soul knows what Guru is and what God is. In the temple of God, the mind drags us downward, away from the truth. It is because of the mind that we cannot partake of that which is inside us. It drags us down like a weight of iron. In turn, the senses are dragging the mind, and the pleasures of the world are dragging the senses. If the attention withdraws from outer environments, leaves the senses, and calms the mind, then only does it realize that it is soul. Have you understood this? Our mind is the barrier between soul and God. Question: why does the mind forget the bliss? Answer: forgetfulness is the chief attribute of human mind. It is due to the gross maya or materialism that we forget the inner bliss and are overtaken by sensuous urges. When inner consciousness grows gradually, mind forgets its lower pulls and relishes inner bliss perpetually with the grace of the Master. Those who are led by their mind impulses are known as manmukhs. Such persons cannot rise above the body consciousness. They do try from time to time, but always keep their minds above the Master, with the result that time and again they fall helplessly. If they could pin their deep faith in the competence of the Master and rely less on their own intellectual reasoning, they could be blessed with this rare privilege of inner inversion to enjoy the supreme bliss. Such dear ones cannot achieve inner stillness and silence. The Master tries to make them understand in one way or the other, but they are so much filled and intoxicated with their mental merchandise that they fail to comprehend the greatness and sublimity of the holy path. You will please understand that mind has its various grooves wherein it clings fast. Basically, when we try to sit silent, only then will we come to know where the shoe pinches. The alphabet of spirituality commences with inner silence, which necessarily requires solitude and seclusion. It is only during these sacred moments of silence that we can understand the basic principles of spirituality and imbibe their right import. The wiles of the mind are both very subtle and risky. It often lies in ambush and makes its inroads when least expected. The ingrained evil propensities, although invisible, are very strong, and time again they come to the surface to deliver blows which often prove fatal. The coil strikes out like lightning, with such sharp and sudden twists and turns that man by himself is helpless in its clutches. Here comes the need for the long and strong arm of the Master, which stretches forth with equal agility to his rescue. Herein, the Master once again reminds us that mind is very wicked and tricky, for it will not readily accept the gospel of the Guru, however reasonable it may be. Knowing full well that we cannot avoid the decrees of heaven by any amount of wishful thinking the mind continues planning and maneuvering otherwise. Our intellect, finite and limited as it is, cannot possibly comprehend the subtle activities of the mind, which goes on thinking endlessly. The only remedy for taming the hydra-headed mind is that of the holy Nam. By contacting the all-audible sound current within and the heaven's holy light, it becomes docile and forgets all else around it. This is the sovereign remedy for all the ills of the world, a panacea that cures all diseases of the body and mind. By administering to it regular doses of the celestial music emanating from the throne of God, the mind gets rid of the lower propensities and begins to enjoy and take delight in the higher ravishing bliss of divine intoxication, which is the greatest gift of the Master. Never agree to the dictates of the mind, as it has 101 ways to keep you stuck fast in the physical body and the terrestrial plane. The hand of the negative power on your head will not allow the mind to obey you. He will go on increasing the duality to make it more and more difficult and confusing. The negative will not help you to overcome this duality. Only the positive can do that. It is a marked difference between the powers. The negative power puts two strong impediments, which are encountered by the initiates of the Master. Firstly, the mind will always be doubtful about the efficacy of holy meditations, and one will start missing the meditations and get devoted to alternative pursuits, substituting them with mere routine readings of the scriptures and other sacred texts. Secondly, it will bring forth an argument that there is no more need for him or her to call on the Master, as initiation per se is sufficient for proceeding on the way back to the home of the Father. Complacency retards inner progress. We are living on a plane which is governed by the negative power and where the inexorable law of karma works supreme. The mind is the agent of this negative power, and in one way or the other, it will entangle you to be kept tied to the many limitations of the body and worldly possessions. Such a skeptical mind will, instead of doing anything useful, find fault with the Master and his path. Negative power has a vast dominion engulfing the first three planes, and those who happen to fall prey to the allurements of their mind, subtle and causal, are caught in finer fetters or bondages. The masters of the highest order who came in the past have left behind some useful treasures in the form of their precious experiences for our guidance, so that we may safely tread in their footsteps. Through the illusion of the body, you also become attached to material objects, and the result is that wherever your attention is, so you become that. You are under the influence of the mind and senses, which are feeding the senses through the outgoing faculties, and the more you feed them, the harder the mind will work and the more strength it will get. Herein, the Master conveys to us another sublime truth by telling us that we have been caught in the spider's web, having prepared a vast net of attachments for binding ourselves down in the mire of delusion and deception. You will appreciate that a spider weaves fine threads of its own secretions and gets entangled therein. Similarly, it is our own mind which has developed an unnecessary attachment with the physical body and its allied relations. Do you know what is the underlying basis of Maya or delusion? Its roots lie in the physical body, from where it springs and spreads around like a gigantic upas tree. We readily forget that we are ensouled bodies and not merely physical bodies. It is the soul currents which permeate through and through the physical plane, whereby it is enlivened, and they in turn get their sustenance from a higher life principle known as the Holy Nam, or the Word. So long as that divine power is working in us, we are alive. And as soon as that power is withdrawn, the whole structure collapses like a pack of cards, and it is then said, "Dust thou art, and unto dust returneth." All right, my time is up. I've been reading from the Teachings of Kirpal Singh, Book 3 on Meditation. I began midway in the section called Dry Spells, and this last section is Obstacles of the Mind. So I thank you for listening, and I thank Master so much for giving us so much information.
And thank you, Sheila, for reading for us. There were 54 people at this evening's satsang. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and thank you, Master, for providing this for us.
I love you with all your imperfections. Why? Because you are sons of God. You see, God resides within you. I wish you come direct. You got the man body. Make the best use of the man body you have got. Only for that reason.